This is Growing the Valley, a podcast by the University of California, Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources. I'm one of your hosts, Luke Milliron, Orchard Systems Advisor for Butte, Tehama, and Glenn Counties.
I'm your other host, Phoebe Gordon, Orchard Systems Advisor for Madera and Merced Counties.
All right, it's time for the 1 minute challenge for the month of August. Phoebe Gordon, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for joining me.
All right, and I have down, and this is just a complete mistake, where I wrote down that Clarissa Reyes goes first. I know that that just means that it must be you. Phoebe goes first.
Unless we're gonna
put Clarissa on the spot to do a 1 minute challenge for almonds and pistachios from an almond field with poor cell reception. But I don't think we're gonna do that. I think I'm gonna task it for you.
Okay. I suppose. Okay, well, I am ready to go whenever you count me down.
All righty. 3, 2, 1, go.
For almonds, harvest is here, but make sure once you get those nuts out of the field, start up the irrigation as soon as possible, as flower buds are differentiating this month and next month. And generally, you want to get your nuts off of the trees and out of the orchard ASAP to reduce continuing damage from navel orangeworm and ants when they're on the ground. You can still pull leaf samples in early August if you have not done so already for nutrient analysis. As for post-harvest nitrogen, at this point in time, unless your trees are deficient, we don't think there is a need for post-harvest nitrogen. For pistachios, lots going on. Kernel development is finishing up, so keep following ET and get the last of your nitrogen on. There's no evidence that pistachios take up nitrogen after harvest. Stink bugs and leaf edible bugs can still cause issues, although damage is not externally visible. Make sure to cut nuts open to look for damage. If you're having issues with mealy bugs, it's too late to spray and you might have issues with residues. Just keep an eye on where those infestations are and plan to come back next year. I have so many things left. Okay. Alternaria can start to show up around this time. Rub the leaves with black spots. If spores come off on your fingers, it could be Alternaria. Best spray timing has passed, so just make notes for next year. Same thing for Botrytis, make notes for next year and send to a lab if you're not sure. If you have young trees in heavy textured or saline soils that tend to hold on to water, consider cutting back or cutting off the water to reduce the risk of winter juvenile tree dieback in late August.
You were right on track to finish at a minute when you finished with almonds, but turns out there's just a ton to do with pistachios in the month of August.
Yeah, it's an important time.
So I, of course, will be tackling walnuts and prunes for the month of August and want to thank all of my Sac Valley Orchard newsletter colleagues for helping me with this 1 minute challenge. So I'm ready when you count me down.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Three considerations for walnuts. Number one, with sunburn already visible in many orchards, mold infections could be high this year. Link to management info in the show notes. Number two, if you're considering an Ethafon spray, start monitoring for packing tissue brown on early varieties. And number three, monitor for navel orangeworm. Healthy walnuts, of course, are only susceptible once the husks begin to split. Three considerations for prunes. Number one, monitor for spider mites, rust, and water status approaching harvest. If spider mite pressure is building right before harvest, consider potassium nitrate spray to top off the potassium levels in the trees and suppress adult spider mites for 2 to 3 weeks. Number two, time your irrigation cutoff to improve dry away ratios and your bottom line. This is best done with a pressure chamber. And number three, double check with your handler about dried fruit value by screen size to help decide if a larger sizer, 1 inch or larger, would be a good idea. All right, Phoebe, what are you seeing out in the field or hearing from growers?
Yeah, I should have looked up my calendar to see what I've done the past month. It's been a busy month. I had a couple of disease farm calls. One was Phytophthora and pistachios. One was inconclusive, and then two more that I'm waiting on the results for. So I think that's typical for farm calls. Usually it's just completely, entirely disease related. Research has gone fine too. I think that's mostly what I've been spending my energies on this month. And so been out in the field a lot and gathering all that peak season data for harvest. I think that in my area, for the most part, almonds crop set looks pretty good. It's not as high as I've seen in previous years, but we didn't get hit with the frost issues that you guys did up in the Sacramento Valley. Pistachios are pretty variable from what I've seen. I haven't really seen any super light orchards, but I've seen some moderate to heavy bearing orchards. I guess I haven't been monitoring kernel development as closely in previous years as I have been this year, but you know, those kernels are getting bigger and bigger, and I'm continuing to get closer and closer to harvest, which, talking to some growers, I think that Golden Hills will probably be start to be pulled out in late August and then move into the later maturing cultivars in September.
Again, lots going on in pistachios. So with the Phytophthora in pistachio, describe what you saw there. What contributed to this?
It was a heavier textured soil than I really like to see pistachios in. And they weren't really irrigating based off of ET needs. And so I think that a lot of growers tend to kind of err on the side of over irrigation rather than under irrigation. And so it's pretty unusual, I think, because pistachios are a little bit more tolerant or at least less susceptible to Phytophthora than maybe almonds and walnuts are. But it was just a very isolated case. Well, there were a couple of trees that were dying, but it was definitely over irrigation related.
Very interesting. I have to mention something that you did a good job covering in your 1 minute challenge that I did not get to. You talked about the limited or zero benefit of nitrogen for your crops in the month of August. And I would reiterate that specifically for walnuts, and especially because we've been hit in 2018 and 2020 in particular with these sudden autumn freeze events. And so the very first step in preparing for a sudden autumn freeze is that cutting off nitrogen in August, applications to young trees by the middle of the month, and then mature trees by the end. So at the very least, I think water is probably the most important thing here, with having some soil moisture when that November freeze event may come is a huge game changer in avoiding severe damage. But the process for preparing for sudden autumn freeze, it starts way back in August with cutting off nitrogen. You don't want super vigorous growth that's going to get fried by a freeze.
I think we're starting to talk about a little bit more with all of these trees, at least walnuts, going through these unusual frost damage. But, you know, in the Midwest, it's very well known that, like, you got to get those trees to start dormancy processes. It's been a long time since I thought about dormancy processes in trees, but basically they start, you know, collecting a bunch of compounds and getting things ready to go so that they don't, cells don't freeze when it actually gets cold. And if a tree has to choose between growing vigorously because conditions are good currently and they have everything they need, or starting to prepare for dormancy, they're going to pick vigor, you know, and growth. Same kind of goes for young trees and reproductive versus vegetative growth. They'll pick vegetative growth if there's really a ton of nitrogen and light and water. So it might seem counterintuitive to kind of cut back on growth because there's still lots of sunshine and heat. But, you know, I did this last year with a research plot. We cut off water at the end of August, and there's still enough residual water in the soil to keep things going for a couple weeks afterwards. So cut it off doesn't mean necessarily growth is going to immediately stop.
Excellent. Yeah, really good point. And, you know, I can empathize with the trees. I fully just want to have dessert at night maybe a second beer and not be getting ready for bed like I should be, but I should be getting the trees ready for bed.
I don't know. A couple beers helps me fall asleep, so.
So some other stuff that I've been seeing lately is, unfortunately, just having some really hard conversations with walnut growers. Here we've had poor walnut prices for a number of years now, and add to that these shipping issues with not being able to do any of our commodities. So, you know, seeing some small acreage that is kind of barely being farmed that maybe shouldn't be farmed at all, and hard conversations all around about people scrambling to pay the bills and figuring out what's next. So right now, myself and my colleagues in the Sac Valley are working on the new UC walnut cost study, and we're certainly going to try to include everything in there to save money however you can in production of walnuts. And then some other things that I've been looking at previously on the podcast several times now. I've discussed the problems with independence on Krimskate E6. Also got called out to look at an orchard with Shasta on Krimskate E6 that wasn't growing as vigorously as the grower would have liked. And one or two trees had kind of this yellow curled leaf symptom, similar to the independence on Krimsk. So not nearly as severe as some of the recent independence on Krimsk I've seen, but this question of how well does Shasta do on Krimsk is an open question. And unfortunately, you know, Shasta just wasn't part of the regional Ammon variety trial that you and I overlook. And if it was, we would have seen how it's doing on Krimsk at Chico State, but it isn't. So unfortunately, growers are the ones doing the experimentation here.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when we were at the almond field tour that it's an internal tour for UC folk, and it's an interesting puzzle.
And again, I'm not sure if there's any major problems with Shasta and Krimsk, but it's certainly something that myself and Franz Niederholzer are looking into, trying to collect as many anecdotes from growers as possible. And Shasta on Krimsk is going to be in the next round of variety trials, and hoping to have that planted at Chico State this winter. And then also just seeing young almond orchard just doing crappily. And I think, again, it goes back to water. Water is the hardest thing that we do. You know, irrigation management's the hardest thing in California farming. When it comes to tree crops, it is the hardest when you have a tiny tree. So in one call, I was pretty convinced it was overwatering. And in another call, it seemed like it was definitely too little water. So it's definitely hard to do, but investing in soil moisture sensing at the very least. But I prefer the pressure chamber, of course, to really dial that in. So you're not just flying blind with guessing how much to water a young orchard.
Well, even just went on a farm call, maybe it was this month, maybe it was last month, with a grower who wasn't sure about if they were irrigating enough or not irrigating too much. And I just asked them, like, have you dug into the soil underneath an emitter and seen what's going on? So you don't even have to have a pressure chamber or soil sensor. You just go out with a probe and see what's happening a foot or 2 feet below the soil surface. And that can be just as valuable as pressure. Well, it gives you different information, I guess, than pressure bombing. But at least when you have young trees, if you know it's actually going into the soil and you do what Bob Beattie would call this, the proctology test, where you stick your finger into the root ball and see if water's getting in there. That's probably one of the best things you can do, at least with newly planted orchards.
Absolutely. When you have a tree, especially a potted tree, and those first 30 days are just so critical, having mm-hmm. the water right next to the tree so that you're getting onto that media and not on the native soil, which is mm-hmm. water will not flow into the media from the native soil. But then 30 or so days later, start moving that back. I see growers 2 years down the road and the emitter is still next to the tree. And they're wondering why they may be getting into Phytophthora or other waterlogging issues. I mean, even if you don't water a ton, you're watering the crown and there are not roots right there. It's just mm-hmm. not a good situation. And then my final two notes is that gophers, I love to be right and I hate to be right on a farm call. But I was on a farm call a month or so ago and said, okay, I just don't see anything above ground that's explaining this. Let's meet in a couple weeks with the backhoe and take a look at these. I think it's gophers. And 3 for 3, just the severe girdling on these almond trees from gophers. So these were fourth leaf, but making sure that you're monitoring for those horseshoe-shaped mounds of gophers, and it's best tackled in spring, but you can really work on gophers as a year-round integrated management of different approaches. This grower had done a couple shankings of strychnine, but now he's having to look into fumigation or other approaches in addition to that, because although he knocked down the population somewhat, he has further to go before he loses a lot more trees. So mm-hmm. that was scary. And then my final note, a potential future plea, is that expenses have gone up for all of farming and all of life in general. And right now we're planning the next variety trial, as I mentioned, that's going to be planted this winter. And
for this site at Chico State. They are looking at an installation cost of some $200,000.
Wow.
For this 30-acre field for solid-set irrigation. And the Chico State Farm, despite there being all this news that the CSU farm system is getting millions and millions of dollars, those dollars are not there yet. And when they do get there, they're not going to be earmarked for this. They're going to be earmarked buildings and stuff. So we're going to hopefully get some support from the Ammon Board, but I'm definitely going to need industry support as well in order for this really critical trial to be able to be planted. So stay tuned for more on that. Well, just wish, you know, everyone happy harvest, stay safe out there, stay cool, and we'll catch you next month.
Thanks for listening to Growing the Valley, a UCANR podcast. You can find out more about this episode at our website, growingthevalleypodcast.com.
We'd like to thank the Almond, Pistachio, Walnut, and Prune Boards for their support. We'd also like to thank my sister, Muriel Gordon, for writing and recording the theme music.